This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 459, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 459. I am Josh Flanagan, and with me is
Paul Montgomery.
Yes, it sounded like it was a recording. Like we're going to use the Paul bot for this one.
This is Paul Montgomery,
and once again, and listen, this isn't how it's going to be. It just happens that this is a particularly busy time of year. It's Connor's birthday right now as we record, and he was like, "Forget you, suckers." I got a pretty girlfriend, and I'm going out of the town.
It's hopefully face down on the sidewalk somewhere. That's in the good way.
His natural state.
His natural state.
So we're down a man.
If you looked up Connor on Google Earth, mm-hmm. you would see him face down on the sidewalk.
Hey, well, yeah. I mean, yeah. But if you spelled
that's
it,
the average.
But if you spelled it C-O-N-N-E-R, you wouldn't, because that's not
you would
him.
See Connor giving you the finger.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's true. Just that look of disappointment in his eyes. So, we are iFanboy. We like comic books. Every week we read a bunch of them, like this week, for example. One of us has to pick the best book that they read. We call that the pick of the week. We talk about it on the show. We're going to talk about other books from the week and some other stuff that comes up. And our aim is to be both entertaining and informative. There it is.
Edutainment.
Yeah, that's right.
Edutainment.
Well, that just makes us sound horrible. Before we get to the show, a quick reminder, this is a review show, which means we are talking about what happened in the books. So if you haven't read them and you are sensitive to having your experience of reading them spoiled, then please, by all means, remove yourself. Otherwise, come back later, you'll be fine. Paul, you had the pick of the week this week, and in some ways, you had an easier time than me, than I did last week, and in some ways, not, I think.
Okay. I don't know what your experience was last week, but
my experience last week was that it was a bit of a milquetoast lineup,
mm-hmm.
and but I didn't have a lot to read. So as opposed to this week, many good books that took a long time to read,
and good in very different ways. So
yes.
The pick this week was She-Hulk number 9, and it's really just a coincidence. Not making any kind of statement because it was announced that it's canceled with January's issue 12, I believe.
I think we know, yes, 12. But to go ahead and just get this out of the way, that was the length of the original story. It was 12, like, here's the 12 issues, here's what it's going to be.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
But didn't get a new episode order.
I think we all know why you actually picked this book.
Because it was good.
Well, maybe a different reason, though.
So it was great.
Maybe, you know, but maybe something more specific that's maybe a little closer to home. Just anything at all in the book that you think that you might
have. I just think there's no mech in there.
Yeah, I know. That's true. You know, we'll just come back to it. We'll come back to it. That's fine.
Old man Captain America, old man Steve Rogers.
Captain Dockers.
Captain is stony-faced Steve Rogers is on trial for the wrongful death of a guy back in the 40s.
Scumbag had it coming.
This is a really interesting case, and being an interesting case, two very interesting litigators involved. So we've got She-Hulk on one side defending Captain America, defending Steve Rogers, and we've got on the other side Matt Murdock, a.k.a. Daredevil. Everybody knows he's Daredevil now, which is kind of fun.
And everybody knows that Steve Rogers is Captain America now.
Yeah. Everybody knows who everybody is. And it's hard to miss.
Everybody knows who She-Hulk is. You're right. She's She-Hulk
because she's green all the time.
Yeah, that's true. No, she didn't have to be, but she is. Wouldn't you
but
be?
She is. Sure. So this is a talking head issue, mostly. And
I guess, but that belies the way that it's a talking head issue, but boy, it's a well laid out talking head issue if that's the case.
Yeah, it really moves, and it's fascinating. It's not just like, you know, just any murder case. It's not just interesting because it's Steve Rogers. It's interesting for a whole bunch of reasons. There's the explanation at the beginning where Matt Murdock, who is kind of mercilessly prosecuting Steve Rogers, doing a very good job, not pulling any punches. We eventually find out that's because Steve asked him to do this to the full extent of his ability, because justice needs to be served. And Steve sort of reveals himself to be the worst, most aggravating client to have if you're a lawyer, on the defense side. So anyways, Matt explains that, you know, this is an interesting case because we're allowing a witness to describe a deathbed confession, basically, or not a confession, but a testimony from someone who is about to die. So it's not hearsay if the person knows that they're about to die. And it's some pretty damning evidence against Steve that in continuing to talk during a very tense scene, he caused someone else's death. Mm-hmm. It's a very complicated and murky kind of issue, but it's laid out in such a way that it's very easy to understand.
Yeah,
Charles Soule is a very good lawyer. he makes everything pretty straightforward.
So we presume.
But anyways, I just thought this was really compelling, and the only action sequence in it is an exposition scene, basically, where Matt appears to Jessica and Jennifer, excuse me, I always forget which J name it is, to She-Hulk, and says, Jennifer, this is why I'm doing this. This is why I'm, you know, being so aggressive in my prosecution, because Steve told me to. And when Captain America tells you to do something, you do it. And he basically tells her in a rooftop chase. So it's like one opportunity to have an action sequence, but there's really no fighting, no, you know, super heroics going on in this issue.
Just getting a run in.
It's about justice and how superheroes might behave. And again, you know, Steve is that friend who's got to do the noble thing and raining on your parade, and he's not going to make it easy to get through this. He's not going to rest on his laurels and just be Steve Rogers. And say, you know, I'm a hero, I'm a do-gooder, and of course these allegations are not true. He wants Matt to do his job. And I think he says, so the truth will come out.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, I don't know, I was smitten by this issue. Mm-hmm. I was super impressed by it I really like the character work of her, like the position of She-Hulk, who is trying to be confident as a lawyer, but we spend enough time with her, we know that she's not entirely confident, but part of it is the act of being confident.
Right.
And how well that was presented in a comic book form, as she's trying to be confident for Steve Rogers because he's Captain America, you know, and so she's putting up this face for him, but also he's Captain America, and she doesn't need to try to fool him. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I really I really enjoyed like how well that was done. I thought that it came through really clearly all the stuff that was going on. So then as you go along, you're watching this you're watching Matt just eviscerate her in the courtroom, and she's like, we are in a lot of trouble. But then at the same time, you know, then you have this reversal where you learn, you know, what's not really what's going on, but it's different than you thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought it was really nice plotting. I was really impressed by the structure and the plot and how everything sort of, and it hasn't come together yet, but how it mm-hmm. all developed, I suppose.
It's a continuing story, but also, I mean, if you hadn't read any of the earlier She-Hulk issues, you could pick up this one
totally,
and everything would, you know, make sense.
However, there was a ton in this issue. Like, there was a lot of things in this issue. Mm-hmm. The officer, when he said, I'm going to explain what the guy said in his own words, and then recited like 1,000 words verbatim, I thought that was a little weird. I think this is a mechanical thing, but I think it was difficult to fit that whole little flashback thing in that 2-page spread, or was it 4-page spread? I forget, but it was really compressed, and I'm not entirely sure what happened. I mean, I got the end result, and it was fine, but it was kind of like, we just have to get that out of the way. It's just the little things, I guess, I noticed. But by the end, the very last 2 panels,
mm-hmm.
Which is the top of Steve Rogers' head, and he says everything he says is true. And then you see the bottom of her face completing that image like it's one image. She just goes, oh, come on. So I was like, it was a wonderful ending. It was one of those, man, I want to read this. I want to read the next part of this right now.
It was a great ending, and it's a superhero story in so much that there are superheroes in it, mm-hmm. but it's more like a, you know, a procedural kind of kind of show, like kind of chapter. And I just
yes.
Whoever, I don't know. I'm just taken with the sort of the gambit that they took with this book. That, you know, who is this for exactly? People with great taste,
well,
I guess. But
I mean, Charles wrote a blog post Friday because mm-hmm. the information had just come out that the book was slated to be done at number 12, and he kind of explains it. He explains it that it's a book for all ages. It's a book for boys and girls. There's pictures of kids, of female kids reading it, and parents saying, you know, this is my 8-year-old cheerleader daughter. This is the only comic she would ever read, and it's important. And so he was trying to make a thing for everybody. So while it's not necessarily an all ages comic, it doesn't talk down to anybody, but it's sort of written in such a way that you can pretty much follow along, you know, to the extent that you want to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the same time, it's a comic for snobs, like you and me, who are looking at this European art, going, now that's something different, that's something special. It's you know, it's She-Hulk. No, this is the other thing, is that no She-Hulk series has ever survived, and they have all been beloved by someone, but mm-hmm. never enough people. It's destined to be a cult book, and it's never because they were bad. John Byrne failed at it. Dan Slott failed at it. And now Charles Soule, I'm not going to say he failed at it, but, you know, the book ended. That's what this title does.
Mm-hmm.
If a She-Hulk series does not get canceled mid-stride, is it truly a She-Hulk book? I don't think it is. Now, at the same time, he is also writing Swamp Thing, which is the other one that legendarily crashes and burns under Mark Miller, Brian Vaughn.
Yeah.
like... really, you know, big names. So he's got one of them still going. So that's really something.
And there was a popcorn Swamp Thing in there just mm-hmm. recently. So that's kind of interesting.
It's true.
A friend asked, you know, a lot of people have been talking up this book. Would I like it? Is there any cheesecake in there? Because like, what level of it is there? Because I couldn't take that. And just making the sort of the presumption that it was going to be a cheesecakey She-Hulk book, because it's just a female superhero character, or because that's the pinups that we see of She-Hulk.
Yeah.
And it was like, there's exactly zero cheesecake.
It's like The Good Wife. I mean, it's like, yeah. There's that much cheesecake. I think.
I would say there's even less cheesecake than
that. Yeah, probably. Of the main character, how's that?
So not that. It's the reverse of cheesecake. It's the inverse of that, but still delicious, you know?
At the same time, Jen's courtroom outfit is fierce.
It's fierce, yeah.
It's orange with a little belt. She's got that matching orange barrette, and that sets off her green skin. That is some nice work right there. Also, I mean, is it finally time that we talk about Dr. Flanagan, the World War II expert?
Is that where you were leading me?
Yeah, that's where I was going.
Cool. It's like, I wonder if that's about Josh.
I think it might be.
I think it's interesting they cast you as a woman.
Oh, that's fine by me. But, you know, that's like when I claimed Joe Keating having a donut in Tech Jacket. You know, that's just bull. That's I put that there. I like donuts. I'm comics donut guy. That's
songs about you, Josh.
Yep, I know. I'm like James Taylor and Warren Beatty. I'm both of those things. Exactly. So yeah, you know what? I don't know that I started off with that as a pick, but I could. I don't even know that it is my pick, but I could easily be convinced that it. I'm absolutely convinced it's the right call. There's nothing wrong with that. I think it's a good pick. It's a good issue.
I've
got three to go. Don't hear that it's canceled and stop reading it. Don't hear that it's canceled and not go pick up the trades. This is a contained story. Actually, it's 8 stories in 12 issues. That's actually what it's going to be at the end. So that's pretty good.
Good deal. So what else came out this week?
Multiversity, The Just, number 1 by Grant Morrison and Ben Oliver. Or is it Olivier? I forget. We didn't talk about this the last time it came out. It seems like I'm trying to figure out what this is, I guess, still. We're still in that early stage of a Grant Morrison thing where you're like, what? What is this? And there's a series of basically number one, they're not one shots, but this one I think was my favorite out of all of them so far. We're basically in a world in the future, and all of the heroes are, all the heroes that we know from DC are gone. And the ones left are their children and sidekicks and their sidekicks' children. Batman is Damian. Superman is... It's funny because they don't really tell you that right away, but Superman shows up and is like, is that Chris? Is that still a thing? And they were like, hey, Chris. And I was like, yes, I remembered. The son of Superman from a number of years ago. And the deal is all the superheroes died off, but before Superman, Clark Kent left, he set up his Superman robots, and there's no crime or danger of anything. So the superheroes are dilettantes, and they have nothing to do. Lex Luthor killed Superman. That's what happened. Because Damian is dating Lex Luthor's daughter.
Sounds about right.
It's, you know what? It was really cool. It
is
was
it Lex's daughter with who, or?
I didn't say. I don't know. Okay. Mercy? I don't know. Annoying cover. Really didn't like the cover. But after that, I thought, you know, the Ben Oliver stuff gave it this sort of special otherworldly quality. Did you read this?
I did not.
Okay.
I think I'm going to wait until this is collected. Mm-hmm. Because I think the Easter eggs are lost on me. I don't think I know the mythology quite well enough to, because all these blog posts after the first one came out with all the annotations and here's everything going on.
See, the thing is, I don't think you need that. I don't need that. I mean, you know who the characters are for the most. You know the main characters are, and you can kind of follow. I don't have time for all that shit. It's there if you want it, and that's cool. But like, I don't have the attention span to deal with all that. And I enjoyed it just fine. I like the mystery of it. I think it's some good Grant Morrison, or at least it's the seeds of it. You know, who knows if it'll deliver in the same way. But a lot of on these things, you know, these things where he's been thinking about them for a really long time. And I'm not using that as the iFanboy joke. I mean, like, I literally think this is one of those things that's brewing, and you go, oh, this is the right kind of thing for Grant Morrison. You know, like, it just feels right for him. He's going to explore what it means to be a superhero and the sort of silly. Fun,
like he's thought
stuff.
About these characters,
yes,
and all the extrapolations to the point where it would be more appropriate to say he's lived with them for decades.
He might say that literally.
Yeah,
judging from some of my past readings of his work, I thought it was super interesting. It was really good. I was kind of, like I say, I was surprised, but I was sort of on the fence when I came to this one. And then there's a magic other dimensional comic books that are causing people to die or kill themselves or something. I don't even know. Oh, you know, one of my favorite things in this is that Kal-El or Superboy is in it, and like his story is that he's an artist and he has an art gallery opening and everybody comes to the party, but nobody wants to talk about the fact that he's, because he's a clone, he's slowly turning into a Bizarro. And so, but like nobody wants to mention it. And so he starts coughing, and he's like, "Ugly art am good." sorry.
That's great.
And it's neat. He's really good at neat concepts and playing around with this. And oh, and all the superheroes who have nothing left to do. So like Kyle Rayner and Wally West, like they stage big supervillain reenactments. You know, with a giant Amazo robot, the Red Amazo, which is Red Tornado and Amazo. You know, because they don't have anything to do, and it's great. And there's
so
all
like
sort
washed
of,
up.
Yeah, well, sort of. But they're trying to keep in shape just in case, and they kind of take it seriously. But then they're also like, you know, Red Tornado actually died during this. Is this okay? Is that too soon? And then there's all this stuff that has happened that they're all dealing with and know about that we don't quite know about.
Why am I not reading this?
I don't know. You really like it. I swear.
Like.
Yeah, it was fun. And I think the last time you and I did a show, we didn't talk about this. And somebody was disappointed in it. But I didn't really have anything to say last time, but I do have stuff to say this time. So,
Okay.
It's good.
Starlight number 6.
This was the first book that I read out of all the books that I had this week. And I thought, well, that's pretty much my pick. That's
got
to be it.
It was up there.
Yeah, it really was. I think the thing that really made me happy about it was that I didn't. Because it was Mark Miller, I didn't know what to expect. I kept thinking. So basically, this is the last issue of this. I guess it's a miniseries. It could go on later, but I think it's just the 6 issues. You know, where the hero saves everybody, and I just kept waiting for the rug to get pulled out, and it didn't.
You're just waiting for like his bowels to spill out, or he's got cancer.
At no point did Duke
falter.
He's in a
coma and he's dreaming this, or you know.
Yeah, at no point did Duke falter, and I kept thinking, well, that's going to be the thing. He really is too old. Not even like the faint of it, though.
Yeah.
There wasn't even the moment that the hero stumbles and you think, oh my goodness, is this it?
Yeah.
No, he just saved the day by being tough.
Like every page, I was like, this is too good to be true. This is going a little. It's that thing, that reading of the end of Breaking Bad, where they were saying it's going too perfectly. It's going too smoothly. This is like a, you know, male, you know, like fantasy, like come true that he gets to do this crazy thing with the guns and he's got to be dreaming this. It's got to be a hallucination.
But as a reader who is so conditioned to that sort of cynicism, it turned out to be surprising.
Yeah.
Which I liked. And also it's Mark Miller. Like I expected him to do the flip on us. And there was just nothing cynical. There was nothing hidden about this, and for some reason that should seem like it's unimaginative, but it totally worked for me.
Looking at the page of all the people pouring into the amphitheater, basically, and that great Mustang, that great Goran Parlov Mustang. This is awesome stuff. And I mean, if you like, you know, and it's total straight up Mobius hats. So If you are snobs like us, as Josh said, and like the European comics, it doesn't get much more gorgeous than this.
No. And it's just like, it was light and old-timey adventure, and the hero wins, and well, all right, you know? And he gets back home, and all of his kids respect him, and everything's good. I'm like, well, okay.
I get to the last page, and I was like, we had the exact same reaction. I was like, when is the other shoe going to drop?
Yeah.
And it doesn't. And and that might be why it's not the pick. Not that I wanted the shoe to drop, but because I'm still waiting for it to drop. Like I'm still waiting to like open the door and there to be like an insert. Like, and this is here. And this is like, oh, we forgot. This is the last 2 pages and something terrible happens to
me. I'm going to go ahead and give Mark Miller credit for stringing us along to that point.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go ahead and think, oh, he did this. He knows we're all waiting for it. And at the very last panel, you're like, what's the thing going to be? What is it? What's going to show me that the villain's still there? Nope, that's it. He's fine. Everything's good. And I'm cool with that.
So bamboozled by sincerity.
Yeah, exactly.
And earnest swashbuckling fun. This was great.
Yeah. So what did you think of Arkham Manor?
Arkham Manor, it's the best worst idea ever. It's a terrible idea to put... Right.
Okay. I mean, yeah. No, I'm not arguing. That's good.
And I think Jerry Duggan, the writer, has talked about that a little bit. That it's like, why would you put all of the Arkham inmates under Wayne Manor? And you know, there's a lot of setup here. And basically, I guess in the fallout of Batman Eternal, which I haven't been reading, Arkham Asylum is no more.
I usually don't understand what's going on, and I just assume I'll put it together out of context.
But I mean, it works. I mean, you can
I haven't done that
explains
yet.
It. So it's but basically, Arkham Manor has been or Arkham Asylum has been leveled. Bruce Wayne no longer has control of Wayne Manor, and is sort of
because of eminent domain.
They're going to go in and they're going to make Wayne Manor.
I didn't know these Democrats had this kind of power, and I think I'm about switching.
I hope there's more of the bureaucrat characters in there who are just like, I put that last one on there just as a joke. And he's like, you know what? That sounds pretty cool. We can put Arkham Asylum in Wayne Manor. And then I loved seeing the bits where Batman is down in the Batcave, and there's all this concrete, you know, that very shoddily like installed at the top of the steps so that no one can get down into the Batcave. And he took the painting of his parents, and so that's wherever he's living now. Mm-hmm. And that's the current status quo in the Batman book that we last left with Endgame. And it's just a weird idea. And now people are starting to die. So, of course, he's got to go undercover into Arkham Asylum.
Yeah.
And he takes on the identity of someone named Jack Shaw. And it's just such a crazy idea. But why not do that?
It's
with
so crazy.
Like Batman.
It just might work.
It just might work. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And I like Duggan's take on Batman.
Uh-huh.
That whole sequence where he's rescuing this woman and he says, you know, call for an ambulance. And she's like, I'm fine. And he's like, it's not for you. And then just starts beating the crap out of these guys.
Yeah.
And the art is very, how would I describe the art?
It's, I don't know how you would describe the art.
I don't know how I would describe it.
It's
Sean Murphy.
It.
I think it,
yeah, Sean Murphy mixed with maybe a bit of Dustin Nguyen, maybe.
Yeah.
Does that sound mm-hmm. about right? I think that's where I was. I didn't love it, but I liked it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I was like, okay, this is a cool thing. And in fact, like I like Jerry Duggan a lot.
Yeah.
I think he's a really funny guy, but I think that underneath that too, like, he's a pretty good storyteller, and I think he's getting better.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if he's one of those guys, like, it's going to be fun to watch him get better because he's been kicking around at the corners of comic books for a while.
Like I said, I think it's a lot of setup in this first issue, and so yeah. I think got to grab the second issue just to judge what it's going to be like. But mm-hmm. as a status quo, it's like crazy fanfic.
Yeah,
and that could be fun.
Yeah, sure. Sure, sure.
So, thumbs up to the current Bat Offices regime.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm glad to see other things happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I like to see some experimentation, some moving around. You know, my question about this kind of thing is always like, well, where is this? How does this fit? Is this in and like, I don't really care what it is. I just like to understand. Like, this isn't supposed to be happening at the same time as the other stories, is it? And then I'm like, well, no, it's fine. I don't care. I just want to know. Let us talk about Lazarus number 12, where we always know what is happening and where we are, because there's only the one story, so it's not a miniseries to get confused about, for example. I love this. As you know, my threat stands. And that's just, if you haven't been listening for a long time, the threat is, if you're out there listening and I have told you to get Lazarus, you did not, and it gets canceled, I will come for you.
It's a fun party.
Yeah.
The cover made me start humming the Beauty and the Beast theme.
Mm-hmm.
They look like Beauty and the Beast there. And there is a bit, I was about to say a bit of bestiality, but that's not the word I was looking for. There are some beastly characters.
Carnality?
There are some beasts behind the beauty. I don't know.
I'll tell you right now why I put this on the list and what I wanted to talk about. This is the first time that we've spent time with some of the heads of the families and seen how they work with each other, and I kind of got it. There's like this, they're like royals, really. There's a courtliness to it. There's procedure. There is, you know, there's things that must be done. There's protocol. It's fun. But the thing I really dug about this is, it was the Lazari mm-hmm. all together at one time, and you start to get a sense about what they're actually like and how human they are. Because forever, the main one that we're watching, the Carlisle Lazarus, she doesn't quite know who she is yet, and she doesn't seem to have a lot of personality of her own. And so you wonder, well, are these people, are these like robots? Are they, you know, and you get to see their human side, I suppose, which I didn't expect to them to be so like horny. to have that much personality and free will, presumably.
Yeah. This one filled some blanks in for me. Mm-hmm. I'd kind of been hoping for some kind of issue, and I didn't know exactly what I wanted, but I wanted an issue or some kind of thread where we learned a little bit more about Forever as an individual. And because it's a plot heavy series and a lot of machinations and a lot of world building going on, but I wanted a little bit more humanity, for lack of a better word.
It is a coming of age story. I mean, really, yeah. that's what we're watching with Forever, I feel like.
And so I love the sequence where she's getting up to dance and she says, and she looks absolutely terrified and she's like, but I don't know how to dance. And he says, Forever, of course you do, because she's like a perfectly engineered person. And so she's, for whatever reason, she has the muscle memory, the innate ability to dance spectacularly. And we get a silent sequence where she's dancing and people are looking on, and all the reactions, that's so much storytelling there. You know, you don't have to have thought balloons or, you know, asides where they're saying, oh, I hate this person. It's all done through the, you know, the facial reactions.
The wonderful, wonderful character acting of Michael Lark.
Mm-hmm.
That guy's so good. I love the expressionism of his pages so much. I love to look at them and go, oh, I know exactly what I'm looking at, and everything is perfectly shaped. And then you zoom in with your eyes and you focus on something and you see every inky brush mark. It's it's this wonderful, like the sum of the parts is greater, you know, the sum of the holes. I can't, it's gone. Whatever it is, you know what I'm saying.
Words.
Yeah, exactly.
Things. Yes.
It looks like the brushwork looks downright messy when you focus on it. Pull your eyes back a little bit, and it is just exquisite.
Enjoy the dance, Josh.
Yeah, that's what I am in my own way. But another good issue.
That's why when I was in high school musicals, the choreographer told me, "You're thinking too much. Stop thinking. Just dance, Paul."
That's my entire life. Is that real story?
Yeah, and then the next play, I said, "Could I be?" It was South Pacific. I said, "Could I be positioned behind a palm tree?" And I said, "We don't have palm trees." And I said, "Well, we should."
So, okay, wait now, hold on.
I actually had fun doing this music.
So say that I would give $1 million to see that.
There's videotapes.
Oh wow.
Yeah, not digitized, but there.
So
are
say that you go to a wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And there's dancing.
Yeah.
Are you out there?
I can slow dance. I don't know what to do. The other things.
Yeah.
Very self-conscious. So.
No, there you go. I don't do that. Mm-hmm. I wish I could, but I usually hate the music, and that's a good excuse for me.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I hate this music. But it's such a typical nerd thing.
Right.
To not dance at a wedding and not just be able to have fun. It's nice that Forever got to, is my point, I guess.
Yeah.
That's good.
Live vicariously through this assassin.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And just not have that thought. You know, pretty sure I look like an idiot right now. Nobody cares that you look like an idiot, but you know in your heart you look like an idiot. And there's where the problem is. So,
if you wanted to get
I had it.
How to dance.
Yeah, that's where I was going. We were right there.
Zumba?
Zumba. Yes, Brazilian workout dance. Isn't that what that is?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, go for that. You could go and buy that at Amazon. But there's a specific way that you could buy it at Amazon that helps me. And the greater us, iFanboy. You can go to iFanboy.com/Amazon, and the link there will take you to our Amazon affiliate link, which means that what you buy at Amazon, a little piece of that is going to go to the iFanboy.com organization. And that's a very easy way to contribute, give it back a little bit, especially as we get into the holidays. Listen, who has time to go out and shop? You're going to get stuck in traffic. You're going to go to the mall. They're not going to have what you want. It's a pain. Just buy the thing from the Amazon link we got, and you're done. You could be done with all of your holiday shopping. And buy big, by the way. by the end of November and just call it a day. So you could do that.
Very little human interaction. It's a wonderful thing.
That's what I'm saying. We are not full humans. We're not fully realized people. And that's your problem. We're like Lazarus.
And soon
although without
the,
any of the physical
drones
skill.
That'll drop off the packages if that, you know.
I have had to have awkward conversations with my UPS guy. Why do you keep getting boxes of comic books? Shut up, sir. Shut up. That's not what I told him because he's going to come back the next day and it would be too weird, which is back to the root of the problem. Anyway, you could also contribute directly by a gift of your monies. You go to ifinbo.com/registration and you could donate directly. You could go $3 a month or $30 a year as we have set it up, or you could anything of your own choosing if you want to give a little back to the show. Helps us. There are costs. The thing is, Carol's dental plan, she insisted on having it, and you know what rates are like these days. Anyway.
She lives on lemon drops.
Yeah, exactly. That stuff will eat right through your enamel. There it is. So,
Stray Bullets Killers number 8. I think I missed talking about a few of these because I was off for some of the episodes.
Hold on, let me catch people up.
With your Stray Bullets report.
Rape, bestiality.
I'm going to try and keep this short. This one adds the new wrinkle of abortion. We've got this as you may recall, this is the most miserable ongoing serial from David Latham today. Anyways, Eli and Virginia are two star-crossed lovers in the 80s, are on a bit of a break right now. And Eli, who you may recall, has a prosthetic leg. That leg has been taken from him by his cousin. He will not give it back until he takes his girlfriend, the cousin's girlfriend, to the clinic to get an abortion because it is an unwanted pregnancy. And Eli takes this young woman to the clinic. He realizes very quickly that she does not want this procedure. And they go to the summer house that he and Virginia had been going to. And one thing leads to another and some one-legged, or I guess three-legged sex with the cousin's girlfriend, and it all ends in a hail of gunfire, and Virginia shows up and saves them, and they're sans clothing, huddled in a bathtub, waiting for the gunman to arrive, but Virginia saves the day. But wait, what are you doing with my boyfriend in the bathtub with no clothes? It's a heartwarming story. I think everyone should check it out.
I don't know how you're able to do it.
Did you walk away?
Just walk away.
Did you walk away from the microphone?
No. I think I sat back a little bit.
Okay.
Sorry.
So anyways, that continues to be just.
I recoiled is what I did.
Yeah. You recoiled and stayed there. How about Stumptown number 2? Some more Greg Rucka goodness. With Justin Greenwood.
I'm a little embarrassed.
Yeah.
I didn't make it. As we were about to record the show.
Yeah, you realize.
I looked up and I was like, "Oh, I'm supposed to be down there in 5 minutes." So it was my next thing to read. I think this was the 17th comic book of the day that I didn't get to. So what I want to know is what did you think? Because I was left a little cold by the other one,
right,
which was very disappointing.
I don't know if this would allay your anxieties about the series.
We just hang out with the football refs.
It continues to be a slow burn. A lot of this issue is in the waiting room while their friend is, you know, in a coma. He was assaulted after the soccer game in the previous issue, and forever. Dex and Ansel are hanging out in the waiting room, and we see some of the guy's friends show up and. Alluding to the fact that we think that, you know, the Seattle fans are responsible for this. And there's this sort of powder keg building up that this is all about soccer hooliganism and, you know, the rival clubs from Seattle and Portland. And, you know, either side is kind of itching to, you know, question the other side. And Dex doesn't know quite what to think. And it's only at the towards the end of the issue where she actually starts investigating and going around the area surrounding the stadium and it's a slow burn, but I like that. I think that he's dropping subtle clues, and it's more about this city and the tensions and sort of this weird phenomena that's surrounding kind of this one sport especially, mm-hmm. and not usually in America. Usually you think of that as...
I wasn't aware that there was much hooliganism in America. I was aware that when it came to American soccer/football, there was a great deal of indifference.
Mm-hmm.
There are high school athletes. But hooliganism, I thought, was like completely restricted to the Brits.
Yeah, so I like it because it's a very specific scenario.
Sure.
These particular towns or these particular cities and communities are more hardcore about it than elsewhere in the country. And it's so far removed even from the European scene that, you know, like, what's going on here? And so you can't really do this story in any other setting. And I'm into it. Right. I'm very curious to see where it goes. And I like the human element. I like the relationship between her and Ansel. So I'm digging it. So here's another one. A bunch of people are clamoring for Edward Scissorhands comics, apparently.
Really?
Apparently. So this is a new book over at IDW. I wasn't going to read this until some friends were talking about it. This is written by Kate Leth with art by Drew Rausch. And I had no idea what to expect with this. You know, it's pretty self-contained movie. You know, I wasn't really expecting the ongoing adventures of Edward Scissorhands. It's not like when I walked out of Pacific Rim, I can't wait for Pacific Rim 2. I was not waiting for Edward Scissorhands 2. And you could even, you know, use the shears to do like the Roman numerals 2. Mm-hmm. I mean, but anyways, this is a sequel. And
let me ask you a question. I'm sorry. I'm going to go ahead and you can tell me more. Now, I know that you liked Pacific Rim very much. Have you ever watched Sons of Anarchy?
I started it and I was like, I don't think this is for me. So I watched
That's my question. How can you like something with Charlie Hunnam in it since Sons of Anarchy is the worst thing to ever air?
Well, there's your answer. I haven't watched that much of it.
Okay.
So.
Okay. That I just did there, by the way.
Love
asterisk
Pacific
trolling.
It's not one of the...
It does have Idris Elba in it.
It's all about the Idris Elba.
It's true. I just realized that both Charlie Hunnam and Ron Perlman are in that.
Mm-hmm.
God, I have to rethink my tacit approval.
Ron Perlman's
is
a lot of fun in that movie. Anyways, Edward Scissorhands.
Yeah, sorry.
Number one from IDW. The art in here is really fun. It's kind of like... it reminds me of like a Cartoon Network animated style. Mm-hmm. So it's very cute, very charming. It takes place after the events of the movie where, you know, there's that coda in the movie where Winona Ryder is older and she's, you know, remembering this weird experience with this Edward Scissorhands person. Mm-hmm. And she has since died. And so this is about her granddaughter.
Some movie where Winona Ryder is old and uses old voice. And that's what I just heard.
Star Trek.
But she wasn't doing like –
she didn't even really talk that much. Yeah.
No. Anyway.
But anyways, yeah, so she's kind of like written off panel. There's just like a newspaper notice that says she's died. And so the new character is the granddaughter. The daughter of the Winona Ryder character doesn't hold to any of these stories that her mother told her, but the granddaughter believes in these fairy tales and about this Edward Scissorhands character. Meanwhile, Edward Scissorhands is back in the estate where he grew up with Vincent Price, and he's living alone, but he discovers another automaton, another kind of robot boy who's more mechanical. And in looking for a friend, he activates him, and it looks like he's not going to be as friendly as Edward Scissorhands. So see where that goes. But if you like
the
movie...
Does he have scissors for hands as well, or is it another
implement? He has Rosie the Robot hands from the Jetsons.
Okay.
Like claw hands, like
claw.
Or like when old people have like the stick with the claw to grab things.
Okay.
The grabber.
Yeah.
He has like grabber hands.
Okay.
But not like a dinosaur head grabber, like a regular mechanical grabber.
What would be the point if it isn't a dinosaur head though?
Or like a claw machine.
Yeah, okay.
Grabber, yeah.
Like Bender.
Bender, yeah, like that.
Yeah, okay. I like how you went for Rosie first though, by the way. Big props.
Yeah.
Big props. His boy Elroy. Jane, his wife.
His boy Elroy. Okay. And then, man, this is all me.
I'm with you on this one.
Wicked and the Divine, number 5. This was really cool. I did not expect this. This is where the spoiler warning comes in. Lucy was sort of like the breakout star of this series. There's already been a ton of Lucy cosplays out there, and they blew up her head.
Ooh.
Blew it up.
They did, in the same spectacular way that the, was it the judge?
It was the judge, yeah. Originally? Who she was accused of, you know, she does that snapping the fingers thing.
Yeah.
I loved the cliffhanger in this, that we find out that the girl, is it Laura? There's so many comic books with so many characters in them. What the hell is your name? Anyways, our main girl, the super fan, basically becomes the new avatar for Lucifer.
Nice.
She snaps her fingers at the end and lights up.
This is my favorite issue of the series so far.
Yeah.
I liked it. It brought stuff together in a way that I think I'd lost the thread a little bit here and there. Maybe it's because I don't have a master's degree in mythology or godisms.
Godisms?
I don't know that that's correct. There you go. Whatever.
Theology?
I thought it was nice. The one thing I've had a handle on the whole time is sort of the characters. And I really liked Lucifer as a character because she was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just didn't quite know where she stood. Not very far from if you liked what Gillen did with Loki, I guess.
Yeah.
Sort of like that. In fact, very similar now that I'm sort of saying it out loud. No, I thought it was a good issue.
Sort of like a mischief god kind of character and just sort of the kind of deliciously evil kind of character that we always enjoy.
Can also just sees through all the BS of all of the things and is bemused by it. So it's like a giant among humans and you can't really expect them to have the same, you know, behavior. You know,
and I imagine this is where the story proper sort of really begins. Mm-hmm. This is an ongoing and Gillen's talked about this being about becoming a creator of things and what that means. And so when you have a fan character in here becoming one of the gods, what's that power going to be like in her hands? What is that responsibility going to be like? What is she going to do with that? And what's the experience going to be becoming part of that pantheon that she's been at odds with in her defense of Lucifer? So it's a really interesting wrinkle.
Yeah.
And did not see that coming, but it makes total sense when you actually sit down and look at all the pieces.
Yep.
And of course, absolutely gorgeous. I think some of Jamie McKelvey's best work yet.
Yes.
I've looked back at some of his older stuff, and while it's still, you know, great, you can definitely see how the evolution.
Oh, I think his style has always been intact, but his storytelling.
The storytelling,
And his layouts have become much more diverse and strong.
Yeah.
So did you continue reading Cyclops?
I did, and then I was like, I don't know if I'm going to continue anymore.
At the end of it or halfway through?
Halfway through.
And then?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know how I felt about this. I kind of really liked what Rucka did with his run of issues with those first 5. And Russell Dauterman too.
Yeah.
I thought it was a really fun story and really kind of self-contained. And I don't know. I'm sort of going back to, I'm migrating back to that place where I was like, I don't like Scott Summers that much.
Okay. I liked it. I was definitely more into it than I was. Cause I entered the day just going, all right, you better win me over. Cause I'm out of here. And I like Layman. I like Layman a lot. I thought it was pretty good. I felt the characters were consistent. From where they were before. Scott's outfit for some reason looked way more ridiculous than it had in the past.
It does.
Like he had like super short shorts with his like vest tucked in. I was weird. I was like, what a nerdlinger. That needs to stop.
And just the faces that he pulled were just.
So yeah, I mean it was a little
Poindexter basically.
I mean, the edges were rounded off a little, I think, that made it interesting before. But you know, at the same time it wasn't bad. I really like the conceit. I really like this not really nerdy, but this withdrawn kid who just doesn't really know what to do and he doesn't fit in and his dad is Han Solo.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out Han Solo at least from the perspective of the kid, it seems like a pretty good guy. And I'm waiting, again, I'm waiting for that shoe to drop of him not being a good guy. And at that point, I will drop the book.
Mm.
Like, I want him to just be a good dad and then things don't work out. But that doesn't seem to work dramatically. And I'm going to get
this
mad.
This is your dad book.
Oh, yeah. Well, they all
this
are.
Is your everything.
Everyone is. Every single thing.
Isn't a father-son relationship.
Yeah, no. But seriously, like, I like that about
Batman takes care of the car. So.
It's, well, the thing is, it's the brave choice because it's the cliche choice is always that the distant father is going to drop the ball and get selfish. It always happens that way, and I don't want it to. Because why does it have to? We'll see. Because I mean, that's the end of the book there when that happens.
I think so often those stories are told from the point of view of the writer, the storyteller is the kid.
Yes.
And in this case, Ruck has talked about this. I'm talking about my experiences as a father because he has, you know, an adolescent son. So,
and I like it from that perspective more. It's more instructive to me. Not that I'm learning how to be a dad from it, but it's more relevant to me. And I've seen enough estranged father stories, and I get the point. I know what it feels like. I don't need to.
What's your favorite estranged father story?
I will tell you.
You can say Cyclops if you want.
No. Okay. I remember watching an episode. an episode of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air made me cry.
Okay.
Like a long time ago, like it was, and I was like watching it like syndicated on my dorm room in my single room in college by myself, and like at the end, Will Smith just like, I just wanted you to love me, and I was like, there are dozens of them. I can't listen to Everclear's Father of Mine, and that's just stupid. No, but I like it can be really powerful storytelling, I think, and it's good to see. It's just good to see the good dad story. It's like it doesn't get done that much, so it's fun. It's like Starlight. You're just like let the old man win.
if my dad weren't my dad, yeah. I wish you were my dad, Josh.
Oh, thanks.
You'd be a good dad.
Yeah,
but my dad's pretty awesome. So
I'm a little impatient sometimes. So we've all got problems.
Let's do some audience questions.
I will share on this show. God damn it. which one you want to do first? Go for it.
Let's talk about Heiko from Germany, writes, my question concerns a topic that came up on the last two shows, although this was written in months ago, probably, namely done-in-one stories. What are some classics, your favorites, and which ones didn't work for you at all? At the time I'm writing this, the only one I can think of is Wolverine and the X-Men number 17, written by Jason Aaron and drawn by Mike Allred, which told us about Duke's job at the school. And it was pretty awesome. That was a great issue. Mm. So what are some of your favorite done-in-one issues?
I wish I'd had time to prepare for this. Do you have a prepared answer for this?
I do have a prepared answer.
Why don't you go for yours, and then I'll talk about mine.
I wrote some down. I really like Batman the Spirit. That was Jeff Loeb and Darwin Cook.
Yeah, good answer. Good answer.
I think one of my all-time favorites is, again, by Darwin. Darwin Cook does some great one-and-dones.
Yeah.
Jonah Hex 50.
Basically all of Darwin's Jonah Hex issues.
Yeah.
Work like that.
But Jonah Hex 50 in particular is just a really standout. That's one I'll always remember. It's the one where he and Tallulah have a kid, and there's this whole sequence where he had 50 bounties that he was going after to tie in with the issue 50. And it's just wonderful. And
I have a page from
those characters.
I think it's that issue.
Do you really?
Yeah, yeah. Connor and Ron bought it for me.
Nice.
Yeah. Brave and the Bold number 33, the only J. Michael Straczynski story that I endorse.
Yeah.
And that is the story of...
he did some good murder, she wrote, so I will say.
that is the story of the night before Barbara Gordon is shot and loses her legs. Wonder
this
Woman,
pre New 52.
Yeah, Wonder Woman and Zatanna.
Yeah,
take her out for a night on the town dancing. Mm-hmm. It was super sweet.
Was that Cliff Chang? Did Cliff Chang draw that?
Yes, Cliff Chang did draw it. There was another one that is gone. Scalped. I don't remember the number, but it's the one that I picked instead of Blackest Night.
It was a good one.
And it was the story of these two I suppose they were Indians on the reservation. This couple, these old people, and they were their land was threatened to be taken away by an Air Force base, and they're killed together. But it's a really sweet love story.
My favorite that she was a scalp.
Yeah, there's a lot of one and dones out there that are good. If you were asking like what's a bad one, I don't.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I mean, I just don't remember them then.
Yeah,
it's just
exactly.
One story, and you just kind of, you know, it gets pushed out of your memory by other good ones. One more I wanted to mention.
Yeah, yeah.
Hellboy in Mexico.
Oh, good one.
Mike Mignola and Richard
Vampire
Corbin.
Vampire turkeys.
Vampire, yeah, turkeys or chickens or something.
Yeah.
And luchadors. It's awesome.
Yeah, there's actually Warren Ellis. All of Warren Ellis's issues for Moon Knight were one and dones, sort of.
Yeah.
And while I'm not going to pick out like that run or those specifically, like he's a guy who's really good at that. There's a collection of Hellblazer stories that Warren Ellis wrote, and they're mostly one issue stories. They're just little ghost stories or haunting stories or stuff like that. They're all really good. And at a time where I was not really a big Warren Ellis fan, I read that and I was like, these are wonderful. I'm trying to think that there's a bunch of Hellblazer stories actually, but some of them might be two issues and I don't remember here and there.
I love just a great short story.
Yeah.
If it's one issue or if it's two issues, mm-hmm. I feel like those should count too, but it's when you can tell a great self-contained story, a lot of them are in, you know, the Mignola verse, mm-hmm. a lot of great, like, you know, issues that are sort of tangents off to the side that are fun. What else is there? There was a fun Spider-Man story, Spider-Man Short Halloween, Seth Meyer and Bill Hader.
Yeah, I didn't love that.
Didn't love that? I thought that was fun.
Was the Rhino story one?
Joe
Kelly Rhino story. I think it might have been two issues, though.
I think it's two issues.
It's a really good little story, I guess, if nothing else. I think, like, I'm thinking of, like in Preacher. And I think mm-hmm. this was two issues, not one, but the one where Jesse meets a guy who served with his father in Vietnam in an airport,
mm-hmm.
and they talk. What a coincidence! You can get away with stuff like that if it's really good. and they talk about Jesse's father's experience in Vietnam. And I think it was two issues, not one, though.
Most issues of All-Star Superman are kind of one and dones.
Yeah,
there's some of them that, you know, follows a kind of serialization, but the one where Pa Kent dies, like Superman can't get to him in time, that one stands out.
Is it because he just walked out in the middle of a tornado for no reason?
Save the dog.
Just no, don't save me.
Don't.
But
do
why?
It.
Don't do it. Don't do it. I'm gonna punch you in slow motion. Why?
Why?
Why? We should have that guy do all of the DC movies. Oh wait, that's the thing that's happening. All right.
We'll get letters.
I don't care.
Okay, how about another question?
I badmouth Sons of Anarchy. It's a really popular show.
Monty writes, yo bros, if Wes Anderson was to ever, probably won't ever happen, make a Marvel or DC movie, what character team series do you want to see him do? And how about non-superhero comics? We're both Wes Anderson fans.
You're way
I'm more.
More
so, yeah. I'm way more.
I'm more like a lapsed Wes Anderson fan. That's I don't feel like about him like I do about Kevin Smith, but I don't have it in me like I used to.
The last one was good.
Which one was that?
See the last one, The Hotel?
No. I've heard it was good.
It was good.
I was on an airplane and it was playing once and I was like, well, if I'm gonna watch it, I'm not gonna watch it like this. I haven't. But I tried to watch Moonrise Kingdom.
Yeah, you didn't like that. That's my least favorite, I think.
That was pretty rough. I didn't like, there was a string of them I didn't like.
Mm.
But I will stand up for the Life Aquatic, not the Life Aquatic, Royal Tenenbaums, and obviously
Royal Tenenbaums, Rushmore.
Yeah.
I like Life Aquatic as well, but it's totally my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
All the, you know.
Anyway.
Anyways, I think.
Oh, I hope you have an answer for this.
I do have a prepared answer.
I know, yeah.
Shazam.
I pictured it. I heard the music. Mark Mothersbaugh. It was like Big Red Cheese. All right, go ahead.
Michael Gambon.
as the wizard?
As the wizard. Bill Murray as Talkie Tawny. Like a nebbish Bill Murray.
Okay, so who's your Captain Marvel?
Is it Captain Marvel?
Yeah.
Ed Norton, probably. I don't know. I didn't think
that far ahead. Is he big enough?
That's why it's funny.
What about Ruffalo?
About Ruffalo. Ruffalo, sure.
Like, I can see his little squinty eyes. I don't know. Maybe he's too old. Maybe like a younger Ruffalo. He's always angry.
Just in terms of the powers, mm-hmm. I think Animal Man.
Really?
I could see him doing like, yeah, I could see
I
him
don't
doing,
see that at all.
I could see him doing Animal Man where it's Owen Wilson. Like, caw-caw, caw-caw. You know, taking on the animal powers.
The power of a bird. Yeah. I'm going to be a bird.
See? You can see it. It's fun.
Yeah. I don't think I can go along with that one.
Doom Patrol, Bill Murray's the guy in the wheelchair.
So you're using his standard cast. I mean, I guess he uses
Well, that's
his
the fun
cast,
of it. He used their repertoire.
That's the deal. I mean, Fantastic Four would have to be the answer, wouldn't it?
Fantastic Four, I guess.
Fantastic Four would totally have to be the answer.
You see, it just the way he uses practical effects to do, like, Mr. Fantastic, mm-hmm. it's just fun. It's
Fantastic Four.
They would do, like, a cross-section
Work
of the Baxter building.
Work with me here.
Yeah.
George Clooney is Mr. Fantastic.
Got it.
Luke Wilson as the Human Torch.
As the Human Torch.
Younger.
Okay.
I'm using license.
Okay.
Bill Murray as the voice of the Thing. And then, let's see, who? I keep seeing Gwyneth Paltrow as the Invisible Woman. It kind of works if you put her Margot-like.
Or Kate Blanchett, if you're going with the repertoire, too.
Yeah.
How about Dr. Doom?
Mr. Little John?
He's dead.
I know. Listen.
He died, sadly.
I know. This is a fantasy thing. It's not going to happen. So, I mean, you do Luke Wilson as the Human Torch, and then Owen Wilson as Dr. Doom. No, that's stupid. Although, literally, I think that I'll go as far as the family thing,
mm-hmm.
and I think that would be really interesting because you could place it in the 60s,
yeah,
and you can have that stilted anti emotionalism, mm-hmm. where they're not saying any of the things, which creates the tension. Which makes the family interesting to watch, which is exactly like his stuff is very family based.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that works in that way. Jason Schwartzman has no parts in my movies.
Oh,
I'm kidding.
He's got to.
Yeah.
You need Mole Man.
No. Adrian Brody as Doom.
As Doom. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. There it is.
I can see it.
Shit, I want to watch this.
Now you want to watch it.
Now
my other one
that.
Is because, you know, that 60s or 70s vibe, Tomb of Dracula with Willem Dafoe or Ralph Fiennes as Dracula.
If you
haven't read Tomb of Dracula, that is a wacky book. And
Marv
totally
Wolfman and Jerry Conway? I think.
Gene Colan,
there you go. Yeah. Jerry Conway is a writer. Well, there you have it.
Oh, and he said non-superhero comics, so Tintin.
Yeah, sure, whatever.
There you go.
You know what? Tintin was already done really well as a movie.
It was.
That's a
I still
great
want
movie.
I still want my Peter Jackson one. They're going to switch off. There's going to be a Spielberg one and then a Peter Jackson one.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
I think it's going to be more than two. I think it was going to be a trilogy. They were going to take turns
doing.
Did
it not do well enough?
I mean, it won awards.
It was really good. Yeah. I remember watching that and just going, hey, Lindsay, this is really, really excellent, isn't it? Yeah. And
that sequence where they're chasing the bird
down
the
hill
thing?
Yeah, no, totally.
It's a great one.
Great stuff. Well, there you go. If you enjoyed those emails and you would like to take part in this process, as our Canadian friends up north say, sorry, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. Tell us who you are, where you're from. We'll try to keep it to around 30 seconds if you're calling in. And there you go. We have a couple of things we wanted to bring up. I was, somebody asked me, like, what are you excited for Constantine tonight? And I was like, is that on? So tell us about.
Don't, Josh.
I saw the pilot a long time
ago.
Yeah,
don't. I waited to watch it until right before we had to record. Mm-hmm. I was just putting it off. Anyway, so if you look back in the feed, you will find a special edition podcast on the Constantine pilot, one of them anyway, because they have to sort of completely redo it for the second episode since they got rid of it.
So that means you have to do a second podcast?
No, we're not. know. But anyways, if you want to hear what we think, it's a very short podcast.
Yeah, just like his jacket.
There's a point in the episode where Connor says, was there anything you did like? And I say no. I try to extend that into something else, but the answer is no.
I mean, basically, then I didn't hate it. I just didn't care.
It was just, I thought it was the most uninspired, just unimaginative. Yes.
It was very, it was a shitty TV adaptation.
You've seen this before.
Yes.
And a bazillion other genre shows.
Right, which John Constantine, there's a lot to that. But, you know, at the same time, I don't think that would ever survive on television. So, you know, I don't blame him.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that show.
So there's that show. You can end, you know, that ends sort of our roundup of the new fall TV premieres.
What's the count?
What's the count?
Like Gotham was meh, and then right. And then The Flash was very good.
Flash is good.
And then Constantine is really, seriously, don't bother.
I would put Constantine at the bottom. I haven't been watching Gotham. Mm-hmm. I've been watching and enjoying Flash and Arrow.
Okay.
There's my jam. Excited for Riverdale.
I am almost convinced to watch Arrow because of the people who are just loving it, but I feel like I'm still not going to like it.
It's fun. It's, you know, it's slightly brainier than Smallville was, but
yeah, I couldn't take Smallville. Case of the week, the villain of the week. I get sick of that stuff really fast.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
but
you have another show, I guess.
I do. I have the podcast called O Comics, which is the official podcast of panels.net, which is all up and running. We did the first show with my regular co-host, Preeti Chibber, and then she's been away in France, so my good buddy David Ocampo guested for the second episode, and since Halloween's coming up, we talked about horror in comics. Horror.
Jeffrey Harwood. Cool. Well, congratulations on all of your success.
Thank you, sir.
How insincere did that sound? It wasn't supposed to. Sometimes when I say sincere things, they sound insincere.
It sounded like you were just trying to be casual. And
okay, I'll go with that.
I understand.
You understand the human condition. That's fine. You can head over to ifanboy.com. You can comment on this show. You can check out those other podcasts that we just mentioned and talked about. You can go over to panels.net and listen to Paul's podcast and all of our other stuff there. Where else are we?
We're at twitter.com/ifanboy and facebook.com/ifanboy. You can follow us all individually. C.S. Kilpatrick, Fuzzy Typewriter, and Jeff Cannata.
When's that going to go away?
I don't edit the script that much.
Okay. And finally, if you guys like us or don't, I guess it's up to you. Or if you don't like me and you want to leave a review on Paul's podcast, I guess that's valid.
Josh got insulted in a review for O Comics, which he is not a part of.
Nope. Arrogant Dillhole.
He's welcome to join us at some point, but yeah.
Arrogant Dillhole. If you want to write a review, iTunes actually really helps. We're at over 1,000, and then we're in the 700 written reviews, which is pretty good. No real bad ones for a while, so I guess we can wait for that. Don't write a fake bad one, though. My ego can't take that.
Yeah, don't call him an arrogant dill hole. He doesn't like it.
Better yet, word of mouth, direct argument. Direct.
Somebody go write an O Comics review and say a nice thing about Josh.
No, I don't. I shouldn't be involved with that. But tell people if you want to tell other people about it, you want to post the links.
Ashamed of me?
Share things. I'm not ashamed of you. No, I'm quite proud of you. Although I don't mean that in a condescending way.
I wasn't fishing. That's it for this show. thank you for listening. I'm Paul.
And I'm Josh, and maybe if the three of us will be on a show again together. Things are getting busy. But I think we're good. We're good. We are black swans. Black swans. Now for spare parts. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now?
I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.